So you got harvest all wrapped up? That's great news. Is this the year that you make the decision to finally sell the family farm? On our Money Sense program this weekend, we're talking farmland economics. We'll get it going after this break. Welcome to our Money Sense program. I'm your host, Brent Laux, and I'm joined today by Andrew Rodick. Andrew is a registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. He's a partner of PWM Private Wealth Council. He's a chartered investment manager, certified international wealth manager. Andrew is a fellow of the Canadian Securities Institute. He holds a master's degree in public policy, and he brings a wealth of experience to his work with clients on their financial journeys. Andrew Rodick, always a pleasure. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Brent. Always a pleasure to be here. And as farmers across the prairies have been taking the crop off, this is a topic I've been looking forward to discussing for sure.
Well, let's get into that. Let's start with the big picture and the data points part of our show title today. The title, Farmland Economics, Data Points and Decision Points. Farmland values, as we know, have been climbing for decades. So what's the current state of the farmland market?
You're absolutely right, Brent. Canadian farmland has seen a remarkable run. According to Farm Credit Canada, and I'm going to be using Farm Credit Canada data throughout the show. So if I say FCC, that's what I'm referring to. But according to FCC, the average value of cultivated farmland, it rose by 9.3% just last year in 2024. Following an 11.5% increase in 2023. But beneath that headline, there are signs of change, and FCC's Farmland Affordability Index is now at its worst level since 1983, especially in Saskatchewan, where affordability is at its lowest since the early 1990s.
Interesting. So land values are up, but affordability is down then?
Right. You could call it affordability or land production economics in a sense. Since 1997, when FCC started reporting dollar figures per acre, farmland values have increased over 920%.
Wow.
So yeah, it's pretty staggering, Brent. And while in that same period of time, net operating income per acre, it's actually only risen about 50%. So now every farm, you know, it has its own factors. But when we look at this spread between that 9, 20 and 50%, this gap suggests that land may be overpriced relative to its income generating potential. But also it reflects that farmland's role as a long term inflation resistant asset is part of that mix, too.
You know, I was reading recently some analysts saying that we might be approaching a bit of a peak on these farmland values. And I know that in the news cycle, there's been a lot of discussion about Trent Clarenbach's research. I've seen some headlines in the Western Producer on this as well. So given your background, Andrew, you've been following this closely. What's your take? Are our land prices hitting a high point, hitting a peak?
That is really the key question, especially when you see some of this research, Brent, and what's been coming out. And really, it's a challenging question, too. No one has a crystal ball to determine which forecast is correct. Certainly, Trent Clarenbach's farmland value studies, they employ excellent technical analysis tools like RSI, moving averages, and even Fibonacci retracements to evaluate these market cycles. From an economic rigor perspective, it's definitely there. The debate often revolves around whether certain methods apply to this asset class, in this case, farmland, but as well as other assets or economic inputs when you're using some of these techniques. I won't get into that debate here, but Trent's findings suggest we're in an overbought territory based on the RSI numbers he was producing, and historically, that signals a potential correction.
Andrew, I know you said no debate, but since I've got you on the program today, I just wanted to mention that technical analysis for farmland seems rather unusual to some. Many folks hear that and they think it's something usually reserved for stocks.
Brent, it is in some ways. When we consider the factors that influence our decision points, data from various sources and perspectives are still crucial, though. We always aim to make decisions based on the best available data. And certainly Clarenbach's, his approach is compelling. He's applied these tools to 100 years of inflation-adjusted farmland data. He's identifying cycles and trying to isolate and assess them properly, you know, such as the 1970s boom and the 1980s crash. So his analysis, it's really demonstrating that land purchased at the peak in 1981, it took decades to recover in value. And there's something to be said for his analysis and how he's applied this.
We're on the topic of farmland economics, data points and decision points with Andrew Rodick. So let's back off on this. Let's zoom out. How does farmland then stack up as an investment compared to, say, other asset classes?
Great question, Brent. You know, farmland for sure is one of the most resilient and inflation protected assets available globally. It has provided really strong long-term returns with lower volatility than certain asset classes that folks might be more, you know, headline news adjusted to, like, of course, stocks or even bond pricing. In Canada, for example, farmland has posted positive returns really every year since 1990, with an average annual return of about 12.75. And that's according to one of the larger farmland indexes out there. Worldwide, farmland demonstrates similar strength. You know, if we look at Australia, irrigated cropland has actually yielded double-digit returns there. And in Brazil, farmland returns, they've reached anywhere from kind of 12 to 15% annualized. Although, you know, with some of these different jurisdictions, when we look at global farmland, there's also different political and currency risks with that asset.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly seems like farmland is performing well globally, but one has to wonder if there's another area to worry about with these numbers then. Double-digit returns really on a tear. So is there a peak? Are we hitting all-time highs that need to see a valley at some point?
There potentially is, Brent, and you know, I going back to part of the earlier conversation with you here. You know, historically, farmland, it's been stable, but we know it's not immune to cycles. I was mentioning 1970 and 1980s before. You know, we saw that 1980s collapse it really across North America, and that was due to certain high interest rate pressures and falling commodity prices. It was kind of a double-edged sword, and it took over 20 years for land values to recover in some regions.
And I think that's part of the argument of some of the research that you referenced earlier here, Andrew. We could be in another one of these cycles now?
Possibly. After years of rapid appreciation, especially post-2020, some analysts are warning of a market plateau or correction. It's the cycles argument that we see in a variety of asset classes, by the way. This is not just for farmland. We know we have different cycles across different parts of the economy. And so, you know, the USDA, it reported that U.S. cropland values rose just, and I know it's going to still sound like a decent number, but 4.7% in 2024. But that's down from double-digit growth in prior years. And early forecasts for 2025 so far, they're actually suggesting a slight dip of about 3%, especially in key farming states like Iowa.
So what do you think's driving that shift then, Andrew, especially those numbers south of the border?
A few things, really. You know, interest rates are higher after what were historically low rates. Now, we're seeing some cutting, and now the Federal Reserve in the U.S., there's forecast for some more cuts, but we've had higher interest rates than some of those historic lows, especially during the COVID period. And so that makes borrowing more expensive. That's pricing out some buyers. We have commodity prices softening. Corn and wheat aren't fetching the premiums that they did in 2022 when we saw a huge commodity run up and jump. And that was really, you know, related to inflationary and post-COVID repricing. And with more institutional capital entering the market as well, there's concern that prices have been pushed beyond what the land can really earn.
We're talking farmland values. Are they at a peak? My guest is Andrew Rodick. You're listening to Money Sense. We're back with more after this break. Welcome back to Money Sense. We're talking farmland values. Are they at a peak? Andrew Rodick is my guest. Something that always comes up is the idea of institutional or investment funds buying land in Saskatchewan. Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a fascinating development, Brent. It is part of kind of the cycles we're talking about. We were actually asked this question during a panel last spring that we hosted at Prairieland. So it's certainly been on the radar for many for a while. You know, keep in mind that statistics show that nearly 30% of Saskatchewan farmland is owned by retired farmers. retired farmers who, for all intents and purposes, are really investors themselves. They are passive owners, usually renting the land if possible, and they are good long-term investors at that. So many funds that aggregate farmland have a timeline. They're not actually as long-term as maybe some of those retired farmers are. These investment funds, they're looking to get in and out dependent on the strategy and the return that they're looking to use, maybe doing some land improvements and the like prior to a resale.
And from what I understand, there are limitations on who can actually invest in these funds, so it doesn't turn into a free-for-all of large institutions and corporations buying up all the farmland through these trusts. And going back to your economic side of things, maybe that's good for Saskatchewan farmland prices.
Yeah, right. No, that's where Saskatchewan's provincial legislation certainly comes into play.
Good thing that we have a public policy graduate here for this one, Andrew.
Well, Brent, different backgrounds come in handy sometimes. And, you're right, though. You're right. The province has very strict rules under the Farm Security Act. Only Canadian citizens, permanent residents, and 100% Canadian-owned corporations can actually own more than 10 acres of farmland. Publicly traded companies and foreign entities are restricted unless they get an exemption from the Farmland Security Board.
And you were talking about investment funds moving in and out, resale. And I think there's a general sentiment that supply is increasing. I remember Tim Hammond was on the show recently with PWM's Kevin Hegedus, and he was talking about more listings and the change that they're seeing in listings across the province.
That's right, Brent. And really a good show with lots of great information for those listeners that want to go back and listen to it online. Tim, he reported on an uptick in farmland listings over the past year. That's helping rebalance supply and demand and could lead to price stabilization. And we also have interim data from FCC. And from July of last year to June of 2025, Saskatchewan farmland is up 12%.
Wow. So maybe now's the time to be getting out of it. What does this mean for farmers then today, especially those that are thinking about selling?
Yeah, going back to the title today, that's the critical decision point coming off of data points. And going back to Trent Clarenbach's analysis and research, he's suggesting that the current prices, just over $2,600 per acre in Saskatchewan, well, that could fall to more like $1,200 an acre if we retrace to the previous highs from 1981. And that's, a potential 50% correction.
Wow, that's a massive drop. And I guess comes with that then massive risk for farmers, I'd have to say. Would you agree?
It is. And while no one can predict timing perfectly on any investment asset, the signals are certainly there. For farmers nearing retirement, this could be a window to consider selling. As Clarenbach actually put it, you want to be careful buying at these levels, right? He's talking about the levels. And when you think about from an investment management lens, you really need to think about your time horizon. How long do you want to hold the asset? When do you want to exit, et cetera?
And I'm sure we've all got stories of friends and family. I know a friend of mine recently who had been farming for 35 years sold off, and he was shocked at the amount of bids that came in for his land, and he made a good return on it. I guess the question is, is that going to stay that way for much longer? And on that front, Andrew, time horizon and other factors, let's talk a bit about behavioral economics. You've shared a lot with our audience over the last year, and a bit on this topic in investing and financial planning. How does psychology then play into farmland decisions?
It plays a huge role. Trent and others have pointed out that land ownership really is emotional. And we see this with our clients. We have lots of farming clients, and farmers often hold land because it's part of their identity, even post-retirement. But that can be what we call an anchoring bias, and sometimes that's anchoring to different factors, emotional factors. It can also be anchoring where you're fixating on past prices. And even loss aversion is another behavioral bias where the fear of selling too early, it can outweigh some other analysis.
Yeah, we can all relate to that. Even if the data says now is the time to sell, emotions are saying, no, hold on to this.
Exactly. And that's where your advisors come in. And I'm not talking just investment advisors, by the way, but your accounting, legal, real estate, especially farmland, real estate advisors and specialists to help clients separate that emotion from strategy. We all bring different perspectives. You're going to be looking at things like the cash flow, the estate planning, and of course, what we've been talking about today with the data points, you know, the market cycles to help guide your decisions.
Okay, Andrew, let's wrap up with some key takeaways for our listeners. What should farmers, landowners, and investors be thinking about?
Of course, yeah, lots of considerations, especially what we've talked about today. But to summarize, perhaps maybe let's call it about five key points for listeners. The way I see it, and based on our conversation today, Brent, you know, you got to know the cycle. We may be at or near a peak. Technical indicators, you know, advise caution. So, you know, think about where we're at in the cycle and what cycles you've experienced. Understanding affordability would be kind of the second. FCC's index shows land being, you know, maybe less affordable than it's been in decades. And that's another data point. We have to think about third, you know, supply trends. The listings are increasing. Could that signal a change in pricing? Four, and we were just touching on this a little bit, you know, evaluating returns, rental yields are falling, comparing farmland to maybe other income generating assets. And then I think, you know, last and maybe most importantly, and we talked about, you know, going out to your other professionals across the board, but planning strategically, thinking about this as a strategic asset, you know, whether you're selling, leasing, holding, you really want to ensure your decisions align with your retirement, estate, and overall financial plans.
Andrew, this has been incredibly insightful on the topic of farmland values. Now, you referenced an upcoming seminar series with PWM. Tell us more about that.
PWM is hosting our free Life After Harvest seminars this November. It's featuring Tim Hammond, an independent real estate brokerage specialist in agricultural real estate sales here in Saskatchewan. We'll cover a lot of what we talked about today in more depth as well, including farmland values, trends, and risks, preparing for a sale, incorporation strategies, protecting your financial well-being, and really the importance of having a clear financial plan and goals. The locations and dates, we're in Unity on November 5th, Rosetown on November 6th, Melfort on November 7th. Saskatoon is going to be the morning of November 8th. Seats are limited, though, so we encourage anyone interested to call our office to reserve a spot or visit our website for more information and to register.
Sounds excellent and will be quite interesting as well. Andrew Rodick, thanks. Anyone listening, visit the website pwmprivatewealth.com. Call or text the office to book your free seat, 306-975-9500. Registration is now open. And as well, feel free to contact PWM for any other financial matters that you might have. That's it for our program this weekend. Whether you're a farmer, investor, or just curious about the economics of land, we hope this has helped you think differently about farmland values and decision making. Andrew Rodick, thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much, Brent. It's always a pleasure to be here.
This is Money Sense. Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. You've been listening to Money Sense.